Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Source Material. I am your host, Jesse Starcher, and tonight on the Rattlehitchin Broadcasting Network, we celebrate the recent release of the Lego Batman movie by discussing an aptly silly Batman book. Batman 66 was a book requested by none other than the patriarch himself, Mark Rattlehitch. Join us as we discuss the camp, the villainy, and the utility belts of Batman 66 Volume 1. Bonus! Mark gives us a quick review of the Lego Batman movie here at the beginning, so enjoy! Don't forget to also give that Rattlehitchin Broadcasting Network Facebook page a like to stay up on top of all the great podcasts that we have to offer. You can join us at your convenience on blogtalkradio.com, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, or iTunes. Just search Rattlehitch to subscribe to the network that Source Material is a part of. If you'd like to follow me on Twitter, you can do so by finding me at Stiznarkey. Also, the show's Twitter is at SourceMatCast. All right, citizens, to the Batcave. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to, if you're tuning in live, which, by the way, apparently I need to start paying attention to my chats here, because our last show that we did, missed some chats, and I'm going to have to figure it out, and tonight's probably not going to be much different, but at some point, I promise, I will be paying attention to our chat room, which goes live at some point once the show's gone. But anyway, regardless, my name is Jesse Starcher. Welcome to Source Material. Tonight, we are celebrating. This is synergizing. We're synergizing in honor of the most recent Batman movie. But you're saying, Jesse, wait a second. The Nolanverse ended. Jesse, wait a second. Batman versus Superman. It was like people panned that. They hated it. They didn't come out with anything new. But wait a second. They did. Lego Batman hit the theaters. Here on the Rattlehitchin Broadcasting Network, we try to keep things, you know, somewhat aligned with the movie universe out there, whether it be Marvel Cinematic U, DC Cinematic U, or anything else. We'll throw some shows at it. And tonight, Source Material is no different. We're going to be discussing Batman 66 Volume 1. And right now, I want to give a special welcome to my special guest, who is still alive and still kicking. You tell him careful with that mic, he'll drop it right on you. His name is Mark Rattlehitch, sir. Welcome back to the Rattlehitchin Broadcasting Network.
Hello, it's your old pal Wheezy. I'm here. I've got lungs full of air and a brain full of thoughts, so I am ready to go here. And that is, you are absolutely right, Jesse Starcher. We here on the Rattlehitchin Broadcasting Network. Now, look, let me just say right off the bat, before we even get into Batman,
the bat,
I'm promising not a lot of coughing tonight. I'm promising not very much wheezing. I'm not promising that I won't have sexy voice.
Oh, you know, my goodness.
Do you know what sexy voice is? Sexy voice is when Mark Rattlehitch, when his throat is not in the best of shape and I get a little hoarse, that's when I get that sort of raspy, sexy voice going on.
Is that how it's described? Have you gotten tweets about that?
I have been told.
You've been told.
Over the years that when I lose my voice, I get a raspy, sexy voice thing going on. And I am just a sexy boy. Sexy boy. I'm not a boy. Sorry. Anywho, I was actually dancing while I did that.
Oh, my goodness. He's feeling it tonight.
Yes, I am celebrating lung capacity. Yes. I am celebrating the ability to walk across my living room floor more than three steps and not be out of breath. So, yeah, I'm on this podcast tonight to talk about Batman. And because of the Lego movie, I mean, Batman is one of these characters where you can put him in his own series of movies. You can do odes to the Batman 66 television series. You can make him the world's greatest detective. You can put him with silly villains. Batman is ubiquitous. There's not a whole lot you can't do with this character. It runs the gamut. And we've had the Tim Burton Superman. We've had the Batman 66 Superman. We've had the Joel Schumacher Superman. Sorry, I'm saying Superman. Batman. Now, after the success of the Lego movie, we've got the Lego Batman. And you best believe that the Lego Batman is its own entity. It's its own thing. It's going to spawn its own universe. They just released the Lego Batman movie. It was a critical and financial success so far. And in celebration of that, we're going to talk about one of the other very popular, silly, but popular iterations of the Batman character, Batman 66, as brought to you by the DC comic Batman 66 Volume 1, which is issues 1 through 5. That's what we're here to talk about tonight in my sexy voice.
Sexy voice. So did you get a chance to go see the movie?
I did.
All right. Well, what'd you think, man?
On Batman. It was so good. First of all, if you're a longtime Batman fan, now listen, I have recently been going on Amazon and I have just been adding like a bunch of Green Arrow, not so much Flash, but Green Arrow, Green Lantern, Supergirl. I'm adding a lot of graphic novels and volumes of collected works, either by author or by title, of a lot of DC comics that I just didn't read growing up. I was a Marvel head. Mm-hmm. But I did read one comic growing up when I was reading comics, and that was Batman. I read through Nightfall. I loved that whole Nightfall storyline. I used to read the Legends of the Dark Knight comic. I had a bunch of graphic novels from the 80s, like, you know, Death in the Family, The Killing Joke. Whose favorite character isn't Batman? It's almost like saying this, like, my favorite character, my favorite color is blue. Like, all right, everyone's fucking favorite color is blue. You know, I like cheeseburgers. Who doesn't like cheeseburgers and pizza? Come on.
Just had a cheeseburger tonight, actually.
Indeed. But really, Batman was the only DC character that I read with any regularity. And so what I'm getting at is, if you're a longtime Batman fan, as I am, this is a love letter. The Lego Batman movie it works on many different levels. It's a love letter to the character. It's a love letter to that universe. It's a parody of that universe. And it's the most successful parody I've seen in a very long time, in the sense that if you look at modern parodies, it's just a series of strung together, disconnected gags that are thematic in nature, but don't really tell a story or really send up the material in the traditional sense of a parody. It's more of, they're just making jokes at the theme's expense, or at the element's expense. Mm-hmm. So, like, you know, like those movie that the Wayans brothers put out, you know, scary movie.
And yeah.
You know, that it's just gags. That's all it is. There's no real story here. There's no Mel Brooks sense of parody where you're really looking at the material and finding, well, what's funny about this. So the Lego Batman movie really brings us back to the old school classic parody of something. And in this case, they're parodying the Batman universe and the Batman character. But it doesn't end there, because it's also a brilliantly told story. It's a story about a relationship, not just between Batman and Robin, but between Batman and the Joker, and Batman and his relationship to Gotham City. So really, they took the strongest element, I think, of the Lego movie, which was tell a story about characters and relationships, but do it with Legos and make it somehow appeal to both kids and adults. And they were like, okay, take that same formula for success, but do it with Batman. And from the opening frenetic action sequence, which we talked about before the show, where Batman is singing his theme song as he's fighting every villain he's ever faced.
Nice.
I was in tears. My kids had no idea why I was laughing so hard. Like, I'm a day out of the hospital, okay? I don't want to talk about this too much, but I went into the hospital Wednesday morning for an outpatient procedure and proceeded to get admitted for 3 days. And I was discharged on Saturday. So Sunday morning, I am not even one full day out of the hospital. And I'm in the theater, tears streaming down my face, still hocking up things out of my throat, laughing my ass off. I may be the only one of my family who really did enjoy it.
Really?
My son liked the fighting, but when they stopped to actually tell a story, he was like, fuck this noise.
That's most three, right?
Three in April. Yeah, he is like, what's I don't get it. Why aren't they fighting still?
Mm-hmm.
And my daughter, like, you know, she's got more patience for this sort of thing. And I think she liked it, but it's a very guy-centric movie, even with the even with the character of Barbara Gordon, who plays a very strong female, my daughter was like, nah, I don't like Poison Ivy. Like, all right.
I've heard that it's hit. Me and Ronnie were actually talking about the popularity of Batman on our last show that we did, which was, well, it hasn't aired on the Rattlesnake Broadcasting Network yet. It's only been here on Source Material YouTube. We did Amalgam Comics Dark Claw, which I don't know. Are you aware of who Dark Claw is? Have you ever heard of Dark Claw?
I don't know what language you're speaking.
Have you ever heard of Amalgam Comics?
I don't understand what you're saying.
All right. Imagine this, Mark Radulich. 1996, Marvel versus DC happens. And then shortly thereafter, after the resolution, I think, maybe prior to like the final issue of DC versus Marvel, the companies combined together their properties for a 12-issue series of Amalgam Comics. So instead of DC and Marvel, you had Amalgam. One of the characters that came out of that was Dark Claw. An amalgamation of Batman and Wolverine together. So we had the opportunity to discuss the Legends of the Dark Claw there on our last show. So two hugely insanely popular characters right now we're getting a Batman movie this month, and we're getting, of course, a Wolverine movie next month. To kind of piggyback off of what you said there, Batman again, We're discussing tonight Batman 66 Volume 1. 1966, that was 51 years ago, okay? This character has been around for 51 years and is still going strong. He's just like, how can your favorite character not be Batman? Would say you're going to enjoy reading a Batman comic at some point in your life if you've read comics. I don't know if I've ever read any, talked to anybody who said, oh, but Batman, he's just what a horrible, horrible character. He's a pretty cool dude. And I think they take that coolness up to the, turn it up to 11, or at least seems like the Lego Batman has a bit of an ego, which, Will Arnett, right? Will Arnett is the voice of Batman. Is that right?
Yes. Will, he plays them very alpha.
Nice. Very nice. I'm going to go ahead and bring up our first issue topic of discussion. We'll keep these brief. What do we got? Like 8 stories to talk about here? 9?
It's 5 issues.
Yeah. Well, you have the trade in front of you.
Yes.
I scrambled and found the pretty much what you would find on like the DC app. So you can either find the print edition, which had a few of these stories, or you could find the web edition, which I assume the way that it broke it up was like, I'm looking at, I think we have 8 stories here, 9 stories. And like some of the stories were, I had 15 issues. I was like, crap, 15? Wait a second. He said this is issue 1 through 5. So I'm scrambling and figuring out. Obviously, they had 15 web-released editions. But yeah,
correct.
Issues 1 through 5. If you have the print editions, this is issues 1 through 5 of Batman 66. I mean, Batman 66, did you watch the show when you was a kid?
No, it's one of the reasons why I wanted to do this one. You know, when we were talking about, there's a Lego Batman comic as such. So the only thing that sort of approaches the level of silliness and the level of self-parody of Batman is the Batman 66, which, you know, if you watch the documentaries about that show, they really did go into it in earnest, trying to capture a certain period of the Batman history. Because I think when people think about Batman, they think Death in the Family. They think The Killing Joke. They think Nightfall. Mm-hmm. You know, they think about the world's greatest detective. They don't think about the Comics Code years. You know, and famously, there's like a issue of Batman where they're like fighting someone in space. And we're not talking like a Martian Manhunter Justice League kind of, but, you know, fighting Darkseid. We're talking like, you know, it's a silly idea and someone's in like a spaceship, you know,
yeah,
an old tin spaceship in space. And I remember there was a documentary talking about how comics went through this period of time where the comics code sort of dictated what the content was going to be.
Oh, yeah.
You might actually know about this more so than I do, being more of a comic expert. But basically, like, what started out as horror books and very serious, you know, grist for the mill became this overly kiddie saturated, silly content.
Mm-hmm.
And Batman was fared no differently than anybody else in that era of comic books. And so if you're talking about, if the show airs in 1966, you're talking about a pre-production period of probably a year. So you're talking 1964, 1965. What era of comic books is that? Is that Silver Age?
Yeah, that's right. The 60s start your Silver Age of comics. Marvel's just getting started out. And DC, of course, Batman's been around for 30 years at this point in time. He started out, I think, in the 30s, I believe. But you're looking at the comics code that you're talking about. I think that really, they really started to get scrutinized. I believe it was in the 50s. So this is, you say that they had to tone things down. Yes, they did. Things became more silly. Things became, especially with this show, more campy. But there was periods of time where if you look at some really early issues of Batman, Batman wasn't above killing some of criminal.
Right. So like, if you're a television producer, and I want to say it was, I'd have to go back and look and see what network it was on, but it was on one of the big three, like either NBC, CBS, or ABC. And you're like, you're a television executive, and you're like, okay, so what's the most popular comic book between 1960 and 1965? Okay, well, probably Batman. And there's already been a Batman television show, the black and white one. And so I was like, okay, let's go ahead and let's make a primetime Batman show. If you're not a comic book expert, but you're pulling from the motif of the day, you're pulling from the 1960s, 1965 comic code era Batman. And if you're pulling from that Batman, you're pulling silly Batman.
Yeah.
And thus you have the beginnings of a show. This isn't Joel Schumacher, who has no concept of what Batman is, apparently, and just decides that his only frame of reference is going to be the 66 television show, and decide that he's going to make not one but two movies that freshen up that motif. This is a decided effort to make a television show based on what Batman is at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And also you have to make it palatable for a 1965, 1966 primetime audience. And so that's why you got the Batman that you got. Remember, in the 60s, on primetime television, you're not getting The Wire.
No, yeah. You're not.
You're not getting Sons of Anarchy. You're getting Brady Bunch.
Yeah, TV. I mean, shoot, TV maybe was, I don't know, probably at least 15 years old at this point in time. It's still relatively young just the invention of the television itself. So the way episodes were structured and how they were aired was completely different and foreign to what we see now.
And with Batman, they really killed, as Sabu once said, they killed the territory almost immediately. That show aired twice a week.
Yes.
That was tune in tomorrow, that was an invention out of necessity because the network demanded a lot of content. So they made these basically these hour-long shows and broke them into two episodes.
Yeah, and these are not special. If there's anybody out there that's never seen a Batman, TV series, an episode from that, these things are, Mark said, they're not The Wire, nor are they special effects masterpieces. I mean, you had a limited budget to put an episode out there, and a lot of that was in makeup, probably.
So to go back, and remember, television budgets, even in the 60s, were still going to be significantly more inexpensive than feature budgets.
Yeah.
But that's neither here nor there. Growing up as a kid, I was born in 1976, so this is full 10 years after the show has aired and then since gone off the air. And it went into syndication almost immediately. So I grew up watching the Batman television show in reruns on cable TV or wherever it was syndicated. And I loved the Batman 66 show. I remember, in the years before DVR and on-demand television and streaming media, the idea of being bored, turning on the television and waiting for something that you actually like to come on.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't necessarily even considered kids programming. So you would catch it maybe on now it's called the UPN, but it was Channel 9 in New York in the middle of Benny Hill. and Danger Mouse.
Yeah.
Yeah. British television.
It was just something to throw in a slot. It really felt like that sometimes. Because, I mean, it had aged, but still syndicated. And you're talking what? You're watching it in the 80s, right?
Right.
Yeah. Me personally, I think I may have caught two or three episodes every once in a while, but I was apparently watching it at a point where I was like, man, this show looks like crap. I couldn't bring myself to enjoy it. And I don't know if it certainly wasn't in my teens. I know it was probably around 8, 9, or 10 years old.
You're a tough critic, Dusty Sutton. My goodness.
Well, as a young kid, I mean, what did we have on at that point in time? This wasn't something that I could go and seek out either. Finding this scheduled was pretty much impossible. You know, it wasn't like a 5 o'clock freaking Batman's coming on. Well, change the channel. No, more like, you know, I stumbled upon it. I was like, hey, that's freaking Batman. And I'd be like, oh, geez. Well, and that was pretty much the end of that. Every once in a while, I'd come across an episode, watch it. But I did not legitimately go and try and find these episodes
I had a completely different take on it. This appealed to me on a lot. Like, I'm not an artsy person, and I certainly didn't have the connection to it of someone who was cognizant of the 60s and all of its cultural aspects.
Yeah.
But I even remember as a kid being really into, and I don't know what the technical name for it is, but like the slanted angles it shot at.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
The neon colors it used. I was into it, man. And that whole beginning, like, it would cold open and it was usually focused on the rogues. And they would commit a crime, and then you would have a befuddled Chief O'Hara and Commissioner Gordon, and they would pick up the red phone, and then they would flash. It would cut to Wayne Manor, and you would have Bruce Wayne and Dick Grayson huddled around the red phone, and then Adam West would say something in hushed tones, and he would look at Dick and he'd go, to the Batcave! And then you'd cut to the opening. And that was the greatest opening ever. I'm sorry. I don't know how you don't dig that opening. The music. Batman.
Were you reading the comics before you watched the show? That might be a difference because.
Probably not.
I was going to say, I was probably. When I found the show, I was fairly aware of who Batman was in the comic book at that point in time. We're talking. You know how you mentioned A Death in the Family?
Right.
I picked that up like shortly after it came out in trade. So that was in the mid 80s. And
I would say the difference is I probably did not grow up early on. I didn't start reading Batman. I didn't start reading comics until I was probably late elementary school, early junior high. Okay. But I did grow up on the Super Friends.
Okay. All right.
So again, when your only experience with Batman is either the Batman 66 show or the Super Friends.
Yeah, we've got different backgrounds of how we came to the character. And I think that might be why I looked at it and went, that guy's totally standing on a building acting like he's climbing up the side of it. This is so fake. Why are they? And then, of course, I think I had very little patience for anything that was older than 10 years. So if it was older than 10 years, if it was the 70s or the 60s, again, I was like, change the channel, you know, Tailspin's on or whatever. I don't know. But, you know, it's still a cult favorite. That is absolutely for sure. There are many people like you who love the show. I just didn't happen to be one of them.
I thought it was great. It had that frenetic opening with that great theme song. And of course, you couldn't have a Batman television show without the, and I don't know what the technical term for it is. My wife would know, but you know, bam, pick, bow, plop. Is that
onomatopoeia? Maybe. That it? I don't know. Yeah. I don't know either. But, well, I was thinking about that too, because we're going to see a lot of that in the comic, which this is that show really tried to emulate what happened in the comics. They pulled so many elements from the comic, but you know, the Biff Bam Pow, that stuff almost to me is synonymous with the TV show, when it was them probably pulling stuff from the comic, I would assume. And now it's like we're coming full circle where now we have a comic about the TV show that was based off of a comic, which is just, correct. It's so crazy to think about that. And they So that DC has their thought of like, okay, hey, we're going to do a Batman 66 comic book. So they pull off Jeff Parker, which is the writer, I believe, through all these issues. I don't know anything that's come before for this guy, so I can't tell you, you know, who this guy is. But I could tell you that, you know, if he's brought in from the creative team, he does a good job, because a lot of what we see in many of these issues are very faithful to what happened in the comic. But what was even, or excuse me, what happened in the TV show. But what was even cooler was to see them pull some elements from continuity that's happened way after the Batman TV show and Batman of the 60s. Of course, we'll talk a little bit about that as well. But they do a good job of melding the two. So anything else on the show before we get into the comic?
I want to say this right up front because it's going to come back.
Mm-hmm.
This is obviously a recognition of the fact that people have, whether it's nostalgia glasses on or just an affection for the television show. This was one of those things where we need to create product in a world where there is rapidly declining interest in comic books. And DC was very smart about this. They found a niche, and it's obviously been a very successful niche because they're still doing it. They've expanded. There's a whole sub niche of DC comics focused on yester era type comic books. So you have Batman 66, you have Wonder Woman 77, and then you have these like team ups where it's like one Batman 66 meets the Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Oh yes.
And meets Steed and Mrs. Peel, and then you have meets the Green Hornet.
Yeah, Kevin Smith wrote the Green Hornet one, I believe, or at least was involved in some way.
Right. And then there's a bunch of offshoots of Wonder Woman as well. And you're just seeing more and more of that now. We talked earlier in the year about, you know, Planet of the Apes and Green Lantern. So there's clearly a market out there for people like myself who appreciate the old stuff and don't always want to read the super serial, you know, everything has to be dark and gritty, the death of everybody.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I just and that's what I'm getting at. And I think it's a great place to start the conversation that, well, you may look back at the Batman 66 television show and say, these were some fucking silly stories. This was a lot of nonsense. But the great thing about a comic book is you can take that nonsense and create wonderful stories with it.
Yeah.
And I'm going to put that out there now, and I'm going to back it up further with further discussion. But the real center, the real heart of Batman 66 Volume 1 at a minimum is these are some truly excellent stories.
All right. Very good. Well, let's go ahead. We'll get to discussing this first issue here. Oh, wait a second. Let me get back there, get to my notes. Our first issue, some interesting stuff going on here where, I mean, I briefly encapsulated as best as I could kind of what happened in the story. We have Riddler is... He shows up and steals. We pretty much go on like almost an Indiana Jones Raiders of a Lost Ark journey here, where Riddler steals this statue by this very famous artist. I can't even remember his name. It's really like Vilkop, I think, is what his name is.
It's Vilkop.
Vilkop. Yes, he steals this statue, and it turns out it's one of a series of three statues. As he steals the statue, he's got to leave clues. He's leaving clues as to what the next statue is that he's going to steal. But as Batman and Robin put things together, they find out that it leads them to this. It's a swinging nightclub called the Meow Wow Wow, if I remember correctly. And who do you think is going to be there at the Meow Wow Wow? Nobody else other than Catwoman, who is actually kind of almost playing. I mean, there's a fight after Batman and Robin show up. And they're like trying to find out where this statue is. Turns out Catwoman does have it. She's just trying to run a nightclub, by the way. She's not in any way, shape, or form, it seems like, involved. But after they find out that the statue's there, Catwoman says, no, it was given to me as a gift. Well, there's this TV that turns on, and it's the Riddler. And he says, hey, guess what? You've found the clue. However, I found the other statue, which ends up being this cat. And then, of course, whatever the TV is turns into a bomb and explodes and ruins the Catwoman's nightclub, along with Batman and Robin. We're left to wonder if they're still alive. Believe it or not, folks, they live. Couldn't see that coming. In issue two, and that's the end. No, Batman and Robin still alive. Catwoman's now pissed. So she's like, okay, hey, look, I'm joining you guys. We got to find the Riddler. They start to put things together. And even though he has this cat statue, Batman and Robin go back to the Batcave, take Catwoman along with them, blindfold her so she doesn't know, of course. You know, the Batcave's a secret thing. Nobody needs to know where the entrance to the Batcave is or where the Batcave is. That actually comes into play here later on down the line in these issues. But goes into the Batcave, and the only thing I could say, some of the fun stuff about these issues is how they kind of fit things in there and nods the little things. Batman has a 3D printer. Okay, this is back in the 60s. But I love how he's like, yeah, this someday I'm thinking about using, maybe marketing this and making some money. But he uses the 3D printer to print off a mock statue of the Golden Cat. Okay. And it turns out Catwoman finds out and says, look, put the cat on where those cat prints are on the other statue. So, okay, here we go. This is where the Raiders of the Lost Ark thing comes into. They put the cat statue on it's the Lady of Gotham, by the way, was the original statue. Couldn't remember what it was called. So they combine these two where these cat prints are, apparently, and then the cat's tail points to someplace on the city of Gotham. It's this map that's on the Lady of Gotham statue. So if everybody's following me here, pretty much the statues are telling them where the third and final statue is, and that's the one the Riddler wants to get a hold of. Riddler makes his way to where this other statue is, opens it up, finds the secret compartment or wherever they're at, and there's a note there, and it turns out Batman and Robin have already got the statue, and they get the jump on the Riddler, and I think that pretty much ends our issue as they put the Riddler away yet once again. Of course, Catwoman takes off with the cat statue. She can't resist that. She's a thief, and it's a golden statue of a cat. She takes off with it, and ha ha ha, guess what? It turned out to be the replica that Bruce Wayne, Batman, Robin put together, so there's no reason to be worried. And that's the end of it. Pretty much our first issue, our first adventure here. Okay, let me just go ahead and say a couple things made me chuckle. And you, sir, your job is to tell me, okay, yeah, that stuff's definitely something that would come out of the TV show, or not. But when they're scaling the nightclub, and I'm going to find the panel here, but they're scaling the nightclub to go find the meow wow wow and find out what exact clue is there. A window opens on the side of the building.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's freaking Dracula. But he's like, I didn't realize I was coming here to find competition. Something similar to that. But is that something that happened?
That's a gag right out of the show.
Okay. All right. So
I don't know if it was Dracula. I don't remember the specifics about it. But there were definitely interactions with people. Scaling the building was an ongoing bit
yes.
in that television show.
I've seen it three times, and I remember that reference.
And they would occasionally interact with somebody who would stick their head out the window and be like, what are you doing? Hello, citizen.
Nice. Well, okay. So the other thing is, of course, the Alf pole, which cracked me up. I think as Alfred is heading down to the Batcave, you know, we got a pole here that says one for, I think, Dick, and the other one says for Bruce. But he's like, ha-ha, to the Alf pole. Anyway, I thought that was pretty funny, too.
They have had dressed up Alfred as Batman at least once.
Oh, really?
There was at least one episode where one of the villains was convinced that Bruce Wayne was Batman. And in order to convince people that he wasn't, he had to have a stand-in for Batman and ended up being Alfred. Yeah, this Alfred in the show, by the way, was very hands-on. Like, he isn't like the nagging Alfred of Michael Caine's version in the Bale Batman mm-hmm. trilogy. This one, he was much more supportive. He was much more hands-on. He helped Batman a lot of times, like, solve problems, solve crimes. And occasionally, he dressed up. And if he had to throw a fist or two, he'd do that as well. I mean, not a lot. It was an older actor.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he straight up looks like, you know, a British butler.
Yeah.
For sure. And I assume that most of what we see here resemble the people that were in the show. I mean, clearly, we're supposed to see... We're supposed to look at Batman and see, help me out, Adam West, and then Burt Ward, right, as yep. Robin. So is this Alfred kind of remind you? Of course, I didn't even look at any pictures. I should have done that before the show, but.
Well enough.
Okay. All right.
Their versions of these characters are right out of the television show. Riddler looks like Frank Gorshin. Joker looks like, what's his face? Not Abe Vigoda. Cesar Romero.
Cesar, yeah, there you go.
Yeah, you know, Penguin looks like Burgess Meredith.
Mm-hmm.
Both Catwomans look like Judy Newmar and Earth Kitt. And you have Egghead, who's Vincent Price.
Okay. All right. Now, see, I didn't even know Egghead was an actual character. I was like, who's this dude? I figured it was somebody that they just, okay, we got to have some goofball of a character.
They created characters for that television show, which were then pulled out of that television show, made regular Batman villains in the comic in certain cases. I'm looking at the Wikipedia page. Characters from the television series, such as the Bookworm, the Minstrel, Sandman, Ogre, Queen of the Cossacks, Zelda the Great, Shame, and Marcia, Queen of Diamonds, all made their first comic book appearance in the series.
Okay. Anything else on these issues here before we get to the next story?
I love right off the bat, you have a not a team up as such, but you have not one but two different villains in the show, because the show typically didn't have the villains bonding.
That was left for the movie, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was the movie where they put the four biggest ones together, and they were like a super team of, you know, they were the Legion of Doom as such.
Mm-hmm.
But in the show, it was usually like one main villain. He didn't generally have a buddy, and he had a bunch of thugs that dressed like him. And so right off the bat, you had the Riddler, and then you had Catwoman, and Catwoman is immediately in that role of like being like almost an anti-hero, which I enjoyed. Also, there are, as we said before, there are limitations in primetime television. You're certainly not going to let a plane on fire. So the level of threat that Batman, you know, part of the reason why they had to come up with these enormously elaborate plots to kill Batman, you know, like, well, we're going to tie him to a thing, and then a horse is going to kick a thing, and then, you know, was not, one, to build tension so that you would come back and watch the second episode, but two, because it's not like there was anything you could do. If you didn't have these elaborate setups, then all that's left is a bunch of punching. Well, the nice thing about the comic is it set a tone for you don't have those limitations anymore. So immediately you have the Riddler who's flying this plane into this event, and like he's so crazed and wanting to kill Batman, kill the Batman, that he sets the plane on fire.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I'm like, wow, there's an intensity about this that was completely missing from the television show. And that's what I mean by, like, just because you're starting with some silly putty doesn't necessarily mean that it has to stay silly. This was a great little detective story with some very intense moments using characters that are traditionally very silly.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Yeah, I agree. I mean, I could tell that, I mean, just like you did, they took it to another level because they could. And it does not ape the show, you know, beat for beat in any way. This is now a comic, and we could do more things. And that's one of the things I love about comic book, almost kind of like adaptations of some stories, some properties, because
like the Flintstones.
The Flintstones. Yeah. You're not going to see that anytime soon on screen. They can take properties that end and continue them in book form, and again, be able to tell a story that involves so much more that they were limited to when they were trying to put it on screen for either the small screen, maybe even sometimes the big screen. Because, you know, hey, getting all those characters together and getting somebody to play them well, it sometimes can be tough. So, yeah, very good, very good. All right, well, let's rock and roll. We'll go on to the next story here. Emperor Penguin.
I love this bit. This was a great story.
I mean, pretty much what happens is Penguin and Mr. Freeze team up to extort the waters of Gotham by creating a large iceberg where Penguin is named Emperor of the country Penguinia. Clearly, you know, hijinks ensue as Batman and Robin attempt to, number one, figure out how they're going to get rid of this iceberg. But I think, you know, one of my favorite things, and I know this is typical of the show, but is how, to the letter of the law, Batman tries to, you know, he tries to stick to it. Like, once he realizes that the Penguin has actually, he's actually created a country, and it's potentially a legitimate country, and he's on foreign soil, and he's invading a foreign country. He's like, whoa, crap, wait a second, maybe I shouldn't be doing this, because it might be illegal. And then, of course, I think he tries to, like, jump off the iceberg, and that's where we get our introduction to Mr. Freeze, who, again, I did not know was somebody that was in the show.
These were the villains that they used, okay?
Okay.
This is probably the simplest way to do this. Catwoman, which was made up of Julie Newmar, Lee Merriweather, and Eartha Kitt. We have Egghead, the Joker, King Tut, Mad Hatter, Mr. Freeze, there we go. Yeah, Art Shivel. Based on the comic book character originally known as Mr. Zero, but later changed to match the new name for the show, an abbreviated origin for the character is provided within the series. What is related that Batman had accidentally spilled cryonic chemical on him during a previous arrest. This renders him incapable of living in temperatures above negative 50 degrees Celsius.
All right. So, Art Shivel. That name escapes me, so it's not like I know who that guy is. You could tell me that, you know, Eartha Kitt, I know, but yeah, like I said, this is the first time I even knew of Mr. Freeze being in. I've got to see a picture. Hold on, we've got to find a picture of what he looked like in the series, because I just want to see how in the world these guys would have tried to.
Here, while you're doing that, I'll read you a couple that were created just for the show.
Please.
Let's see. We have Archer. By company records, the Archer was created specifically for the series by writer Stanley Ralph Ross and not related to a previous comic book character. We've got Bookworm, an original character created for the series.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, I'm looking at a picture of this guy. Go ahead. Continue.
Lord Marmaduke Fogg. Fogg was created specifically for the series. Louis the Lilac. I remember Louis the Lilac. Louis was created specifically for the series and was presented as a gangster using a flower motif.
Some of the goofiest stuff.
Minstrel, I remember Minstrel, was created specifically for the series, was presented as a genius in the field of electrical engineering, and styled himself as a medieval troubadour. The Sandman, which was different than the Sandman that you're familiar with. Okay.
All right, here we go. Hold on, Mr. Freeze. I got a nice little slideshow we can show everybody here on YouTube what Mr. Freeze looked like.
By the way, there is a wiki link to Batclimb cameos.
Really?
Yes. Some right. Batclimb cameos are as follows. Jerry Lewis, Dick Clark, Van Williams and Bruce Lee as the Green Hornet and Kato.
Oh, nice.
Sammy Davis Jr., Ted Cassidy, Don Ho, Art Linkletter, Susie Knickerbocker, and Cyril Lord.
Batclimb cameos. Here's Art Shivel. I don't know if that's him or not there. That certainly doesn't look like the same guy, but clearly the same getup.
It was he was played by three different characters.
Okay.
By three different actors.
So that's pretty much my synopsis, really. I mean, they of course, Batman and Robin save the day. The way that they find out that the day can be saved is, even though Batman's captured, Robin hops into whatever the Bat submarine is, Batmarine or whatever, goes underneath and finds out that, you know, Penguin's, his idea was to extort money because what he can do is block the waterway. And if ships need to come in there, he can say, okay, hey, pay me and then I'll let you through. Well, once they realize that this iceberg, Penguinia, can be moved by a submarine, it is not a country anymore. It is a vehicle. Therefore, him being emperor, and it allows our caped crusaders the opportunity to bring them to justice, because that is not a country after all. It's a vehicle, and these guys are breaking the law. So there you go. That's Emperor Penguin. Again, I think they escape in this one, if I remember correctly. I think Penguin and Mr. Freeze escape and get out of there. I don't remember. Mark, you do remember off the top of your head if they capture?
I believe I believe they do escape.
They get away. My favorite part again. There's another favorite part that I have in here. A recurring thing, which I don't know if this happened in the show again, but take the utility belt off of Batman. They're smart enough to do that in this issue. I want to point out that it was not the main supervillain's idea. It wasn't. I don't think it was Mr. Freeze's, and I don't think it was Penguin's. It was a lackey. Was smart enough to take the bat utility belt off of Batman, so he could not get away. That is important, folks, because I'm going to have a point here at some. I'm going to bring that back up. Mark, what do you got to say about this story?
All right. First of all, I thought this was a brilliant story.
Yeah, you liked it. You said you liked it.
I thought the concept of Penguin creating a block of ice and calling himself Emperor Penguin, which is hilarious.
Yeah.
And saying, like, I am now the leader of a sovereign nation. And he's like hijacking people for money, you know, like extorting them for money or whatever. I actually thought that, you know, when you think about Batman villains, it's they never had an elaborate plot as trying to take over the universe. These were thieves. These were about robbing and stealing.
Yes.
I thought as an extension of that, this was actually pretty fun. I have to say, like, I'm a story person more than an art person. But I know you've asked me about that in the past. Mm-hmm. I have to say, this is some of the best artwork in the entire book.
Oh, you like this one?
They did a really good job with, you know, the image of Burgess Meredith as Penguin. But I also like the fact that they didn't play up a lot of the language that was used in the show. If you watch the Batman movie from the 60s, mm-hmm. No one talks without constantly doing their gimmick.
Okay.
And it's like every other word out of Penguin's mouth is something to do with birds.
Catwoman's got a meow or something. Yeah. Or some kind of cat reference.
Like, I'm going to meow you to death. I'm like, oh, shut up. Everything is perfect. So it's like, all right. And what I liked about this, and you'll see it again with the next one with the Joker, is they just stuck with the story. There might have been a little bit of that, but for the most part, they played it pretty straight. Mm-hmm. And it was more of the idea than it was the gimmick. So I liked the art. I thought the story was great. The other thing I'm going to say is it set a tone for Robin going forward with the rest of the stories that he's not just like Batman's sidekick. Mm-hmm. He's a competent superhero in his own right. He saves Batman. He saves Batman with his own wits.
Yeah.
And wisdom.
Batman does not have his utility belt.
Right.
He needs to rely on someone else.
But he gets caught, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, like, he has to, like, legitimately rescue Batman because Batman gets frozen by Mr. Freeze. And it's like, because it's a short story, they really didn't get into a whole lot of, like, what am I going to do? And, you know, like self-doubt or anything. It was Robin was competent. He knew what to do and he got him out of there. Mm-hmm. I'm like, well, there's a level of sophistication and confidence in this character that I'm enjoying that not wasn't necessarily present in the show. I mean, Burt Ward played him pretty straight, and I don't mean like straight versus gay, but I'm like, he wasn't playing him for laughs as such. But they tended to write his character a little too aw shucks.
Yeah.
A little too, golly, Batman, you certainly know the right answers all the time. And it was nice to see a situation where they're more of a partnership and not so much of a Master Ward situation. Mm-hmm. You know, and so I said, overall, I just thought it was a great story. There are some of these I would have loved to have seen, like, expanded into, like, full movies or episodes of a more serious TV show. Because I actually thought this was great. Like, this is something I would want to see more of.
There are one of the other staples that come out of the show that I really remember is, holy interphrase here, Batman. And yeah. I don't think we may get that every once in a great while throughout the books, but that didn't seem like, oh, geez, here we go again with the holy whatever.
Yeah, there's not a lot of lazy writing in this.
No, there's not. Ty Templeton, by the way, you might want to remember that if you ever see his art again. That's the guy who drew this particular story. The script is, we mentioned Jeff Parker. He's solid throughout this whole all these stories that we're talking about, but the art is different for each story. So remember that. Ty Templeton's the one that did Emperor Penguin. I was just kind of perusing through the issue here, just looking for anything else that kind of caught my eye. You know, they do have some ridiculous stuff that happens, like, okay, here we go. We got the extended scissors that cut cables on the bat sub. You know, you just have those hanging out every once in a while.
I'll allow it.
All right, so let's go ahead. We'll get into the third story here. Third story, Chandelle Chanteuse, which I don't know what a chanteuse is. I've heard that word before. But hey, here we go. Chandelle, a reformed criminal pianist, which, again, I don't know if Chandelle's been something that's been in the book before or not, or excuse me, the show before. But he's a reformed criminal pianist.
Good night, everybody.
And he's putting on a show. And Bruce and Kathy, was this a love interest that I totally missed out on?
No, I mean, his character was, you know, his alter ego was Swinging Playboy.
Okay. All right. So he's got a revolving door of women that he hangs out with. Okay.
Yes. He wasn't going on fishing expeditions with Dick.
So they attend Chandelle's concert, and turns out Chandelle, playing very, you know, playing great piano, he's also accompanied by the lovely singing of Lori, who has this siren's voice that can entrance all the men in the audience, and she does so and convinces the men to empty the women's pocketbooks onto the table so that she can rob them. At first, I thought Chandelle was part of it. Turns out he's not. But she has them, you know, of course, Batman is somehow immune to this. We find out he's trained himself. So he's clearly run into Lori before in the past. He's trained himself not to pay attention to her siren voice and is able to, the one man in the whole place that can actually do something about it. As he goes up to try and do something and stop her, she uses some kind of like aerosol throat spray that then causes him to have hallucinations. Now there's a bunch of references in this book. I guarantee it that I had no idea, because he's going through supposedly like his memories as she's singing these songs and he's trying to get to her. And of course he's seeing, she's like 20 feet tall, all sorts of crazy stuff is happening. A bunch of 60s stuff. That's for dang sure. He's tripping. When he's almost able to try and do something, he isn't able to actually stop her. Who ends up stopping her is Kathy, who grabs a pitcher full of water, throws it in her face, stops her from singing, thereby allows the Batman to take care of Lori. Actually, I think it's Shondell who actually steps up and says, "Oh my goodness," and takes something and wraps her or something around her mouth so she can't sing anymore.
Yep.
All right. There we go. That is pretty much our third story. We're kind of left with like this mystery of who gave her this aerosol as he's walking out the back door, unbeknownst to Bruce, Kathy, or anybody else. This guy is like supplying Lori with this aerosol hallucinogenic spray that she can use along with her voice. What they call it? They called it, hold on, a voice serum. So goofy, funny. I'm going to go ahead and bring up some pages. Go ahead and talk about this one, Mark. I mean, it was a story. That's about all I can say.
Yeah, there's not enough of it. I mean, I thought it was an interesting idea. I feel like with the Poison Ivy character, they've played with this idea before of hypnotism and using men to carry out her will. My daughter would probably really like this character. It was too short. I don't even know why they had to have the Shondell character in it. You know,
yeah.
It was one of those where I'm sure it was like the back end of a comic. And the only thing that's like really interesting about it is not the artwork in the sense that these are well-drawn pictures, but when it gets to the hallucinations, I thought these were really trippy.
Oh yeah.
These were something I would like to see at like an actual visualization of.
The whole him riding a shark. Has that happened before in the show?
Surfing, yes, with the Bermuda shorts over the costume, yes. Riding the not even a joke. Go right now. Google, fuck, I'll do it myself and you can find it too. Google Batman and Joker surfing.
Oh my god.
That's a real thing.
I'll do it right now. Well, I will screen share this piece as soon as I find it. Now, how about the shark?
Okay, that's a gag from, at a minimum, the Batman movie, where he's hanging from a helicopter and there's a shark biting him, and he pulls out the shark repellent.
The shark repellent, yes. Okay, now I recall that. Oh my gosh! All right.
Thing is, they actually sell the Batman and Joker surfing toys.
I'm just going to go ahead and straight up share my web browser because this is a GIF. There is, okay, there we go. There's a Bermuda bat shorts.
There it is.
Wow. Dude, that's insane. Whoa.
He's hanging 10.
Surfing was all the rage back then, too. I mean, that was a big thing.
Now you got to pull up a picture of Batman doing the Batusi.
Oh, now that's alluded to in the first issue. I didn't bring it up. I love how she's like, hey, show us how to do that dance. Or at the meow, wow, wow.
Right.
And
there it is.
Yeah.
There's the Batusi.
Let's see if we can find a GIF.
Which comes up in the Lego movie.
Oh, of course. I don't know. ladies and gentlemen, the Batusi has made its appearance on the sword. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, because he's doing the fucking Macarena.
I know, dude. It's having spasms. All right. So anyway, goodness. Yeah, they alluded to that in the beginning when people at the club and they're like, oh, what's that dance you do? He's like, citizens, we're not here to, I'm not here to dance. I love how he refers to them as citizens, please.
Of course.
All right. Okay. So there's Shondell Chanteuse. Let's go to the next story, which is probably one of the, you know, this one kind of took me by surprise because I just really honestly learned about the Red Hood recently.
And the animated Under the Red Hood movie is one of the best of the DC animated movies.
Is it really?
Yeah, it's really good.
Let me go ahead and bring up the picture here real quick. This was, right off the bat, you look at your cover here. It's Batman 66, and he's got a hold of the Joker. Oh, boy, we've been waiting for the Joker to show up. Wow, we get a neat story here. The two halves of the story, one's called, it's kind of neat. I don't know if you paid attention to this, Mark, but how they title the stories. The Joker sees Red, and the second story is called The Batman Hunts the Dead. They always seem to rhyme. But the Red Hood appears, robbing places, and he demands that the Joker be turned over to him at a cemetery. Now, the Joker is hanging out at Arkham Asylum like he does many of his days because he's confined there usually after Batman gets a hold of him. Now, Batman heads to Arkham because we got to figure out what this Red Hood wants. Now, of course, me reading this, I'm like, wait a second. Red Hood is the Joker, isn't he? Well, you know, he can't be in two places at once, right? Batman heads to Arkham, and we meet 66 version of a Dr. Quinn, not Medicine Woman. Maybe of the Harley race. Look at that wrestling joke. The Harley Quinn version. But anyway, she's not Harley Quinn. She is the new psychiatrist on the block, as you'd say. And we also meet a Professor Overbeck who has been attempting to rehab the Joker. And he has this machine that he briefly shows Batman. And Batman's like, well, good luck with that because the Joker's beyond pretty much any help. So Professor Overbeck, he's important. Now, Batman's able to convince him to let him take the Joker with the hopes of getting the drop on this Red Hood character at this cemetery. Unfortunately, they do not. The Red Hood escapes with the Joker, and of course, the Red Hood is backed up by a bunch of cronies. And they go at this cemetery, they hit a button, and all the bad guys pretty much drop to 6 feet under. And Batman and Robin are left to kind of go and take off after them, take chase, as they're going underneath this cemetery looking and trying to follow the Red Hood. Now, the Joker is taken prisoner, but what we find out is that it is all a ruse with Dr. Overbeck as an unwilling Red Hood. So they, you know, the Joker walks over, pulls off the hood, the red helmet, and there sits Dr. Overbeck. And you're like, wait a second. And all of a sudden, Dr. Overbeck doesn't know where he's at. So you're trying to figure out what is going on here? Why is this professor, you know, running around committing crimes, and then once the hood's off of there, he doesn't know where he's at. Well, it turns out that there's a smaller version of this rehab machine that is in that hood, which makes Joker's subconscious come forward in that helmet. The whole purpose of that machine was so that the professor could use his own mind to kind of help out those whose mind is not completely there. But what ended up happening is when he used this on the Joker, the Joker's mind is so warped that it actually went back and warped the professor's mind instead. So once the Joker figured that out, now this only works when the helmet or the apparatus is on top of his head. Once it's off of there, that's why he doesn't realize where he's at. It's some kind of backwards way of it affects the subconscious, and the Joker actually kind of doesn't take over, but it just makes whoever it is evil, to where when Batman and Robin finally show up, they're like, well, we got to take that Red Hood and we've got to seal it up somewhere because it has been tainted by the Joker's evil mind, insanity, if you will. And now Batman and Robin, of course, save the day. I mean, I don't want to sit here and say boom, biff, pow, but that's pretty much what you get. You got the cronies coming at him and he's hitting them left and right. And they save the professor along with take the Joker back to Arkham Asylum. Now, one of my favorite parts of this whole story is the fact that the Joker breaks out in laughter after one of the lackeys are like, hey, wasn't that your plan all along to get Batman and Robin to break you out of Arkham? And he kind of sits there and then all of a sudden he just busts out in laughter because, yeah, and that's what was, that's his whole intent all along, and it actually worked, and that's pretty damn funny. So, all right, Mark, what do you got to say about the Joker sees Red and the Batman hunts the Dead?
First of all, this was brilliant.
Okay.
They didn't get into it far enough because it's a short story. But imagine basically, like, you're at a pitch meeting, you know, you're at a Warner Brothers pitch meeting. You're like, okay, we want to reinvent the Batman series and bring it into the DC Cinematic Universe along with Man of Steel. Like, okay, well, let's not jump the gun. We got to reintroduce Batman. We got to reintroduce the Joker. Hey, I have a great idea. Why don't we do Batman versus Superman? Shut the fuck up. Just let's not go. You're going too fast. Let's establish the characters first. What if somebody had actually said, hey, why don't we basically take the premise of Silence of the Lambs but make the Joker Hannibal Lecter.
Mm. Yeah.
I thought that was great. What a great take on the Joker. You know, like, we've already seen enough of the Batman versus the Joker. What if you had a movie where the Joker actually, like, worked with Batman, and there was that tension where, like, you don't know if he's going to turn on Batman or not. And the story just needs a little bit of a tweak, where the Red Hood is actually not just challenging the Joker, but he's out there just fucking murdering people and, you know, and murders family and everything.
Of course, right? That's not going to happen in the 66 verse at any
point. No. I'm saying, like, what if this were, like, your basic plot elements for a bigger motion picture?
I got you.
Where basically Batman has to enlist the help of the Joker to catch the Red Hood. And it turns out the Red Hood is, in fact, this doctor who was running Arkham, who in using this therapeutic tool drove himself crazy and, like, killed his own family unknowingly. It made him disassociate. Mm-hmm. So where he had a second personality that would take over when this hood was on, where he would become the Red Hood. And, you know, and like I said, he ends up killing his own family. He does all these terrible things, you know, and the Joker doesn't even, like, at the end, doesn't even fight Batman. He just thinks that's hilarious.
Yeah, man, that's good. That would rock, man. I saw Cesar Romero's Joker as, of course, the silly, goofy Joker that he is, that he's portrayed. But I certainly didn't take a spin on it like that. I mean, like you did, which that makes it that's a good idea. It's pretty interesting.
That was what I said. I mean, obviously, it's a very, like, dumbed down version of that idea. But that's what they were hinting at with this. Like we have this guy. He's out there. He's calling you out. We need you to help catch him. And it basically becomes like a Silence of the Lambs, Hannibal Lecter sort of thing.
Yeah.
And I would totally have it where they finally catch the Red Hood, and at the end, he's replaced by Harley Quinn. I wouldn't have her in the movie. But again, that's me. And then I would build that. It would be Batman, Arkham Asylum, Batman, Mad Love, and move on from there.
The Rattlitch verse.
Yes. Warner Brothers, I'm waiting for you to call me. I can fix your DC Cinematic Universe. Me and Jeff Johns, we will put this right. Anyway, because clearly you're having trouble. Have you heard the latest on that, by the way, that, like, now Ben Affleck is out of directing and may not actually play the Batman anymore?
That's what I've heard. Yeah. He's, like, totally stepped back. That's pretty, pretty big news. I mean, when you have a big shakeup like that, you don't want to say it's tough to recover, but man, you gotta go on damage control or something, because people start speculating.
Well, it's indicative of how Warner Brothers has been doing things. Like, hey, we have this great idea. Do you have a script? We don't need a fucking script. We just need to shoot the movie. No, that's not how this game is played.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, but I thought as far as a 66 downsized version of the idea that I just threw out there, I thought this was great. I thought it was a great use of the Joker. I talked about this with Mad Love, how there are different versions of the Joker. There's the Batman the Animated Series, where he's more performance artist. You know, if I have to explain the joke to you, it's not funny.
Yeah.
So I'm going to create this elaborate plot to kill the Batman that is supposed to be on some level humorous. Cesar Romero's version of the Joker was a thief, but he was a thief that did these elaborate schemes that were somehow revolving around humor. And it took him out of that, and it gave him something else to do and another way to be, which I was really excited by. The introduction, I mean, the Red Hood is a post-66 invention.
Yep.
So to see a post-66, and you'll see it in other volumes of this. You know, I was reading the Wikipedia, you know, Bane's in Batman 66. Killer Croc is, and these are both post-66 inventions, obviously.
Uh-huh.
I thought that was a really interesting take. And again, it opened up this universe to something really different and wonderful. So I thoroughly enjoyed this story. I just wish they had taken it to another level.
I'm just scrolling through these some of these pages. And I remember when I came to this spot where they were getting ready to introduce the Joker, there was some tension. Because he's just sitting there at this table and Batman's trying to talk to him. And I'm like, man, this is not campy. This is some real tension that I feel, because, man, this is going to be the first appearance of the Joker. When he turns around from that table, what's he going to look like? And then boom, Cesar Romero pops up on the other side because he's created this mannequin or whatever to sit there at this desk, and he scares the ever-living crap out of Batman and Robin, and he just howling, laughing. Take notice, if you haven't seen, of course, they do such a good job of, just like you said, staying faithful to most of the actors that played these villains. You can even see, like, the mustache of Cesar Romero underneath the white makeup. You know, anybody else who took upon the Joker, may have missed a detail like that. They tried to keep it as faithful to the series as possible by just that hint of a mustache on the Joker. So, interesting. All right. You ready to move on?
Yes.
All right. Here we go. Let's go ahead.
Before I pitch you another movie idea.
Schedule it. All right. So let's go ahead. Man, we got about three or four more stories here. I'm going to try and make them quick.
Yeah, this one does not need a lot of detail.
All right. Which one is it? Scrambled eggs?
Okay. Yes.
Scrambled eggs.
This is gay.
Which, again, man, I just don't know much about the show. I was like, who's this egg guy?
Okay, all you needed to know about Egghead is in this story.
Okay, all right.
I mean, as much as I enjoyed this book, this shit was lame. This is right out of the television.
Okay, all right. My first note is take that utility belt. All right, that is my first note, by the way, because we open up and it's Egghead's got them. Got Batman and Robin suspended. They're in the egg blimp or whatever it is. He's got them suspended in this egg upside down. He's got them. He's got them at his whim, and he decides to drop them. He's going to kill them. But one of the things that they mention, even freaking one of the henchmen, I swear, I don't know if it says that in here or if it was in a different one, but Batman's got the utility belt on. You know, if he's going to drop him, or if you've got Batman, you need to take the utility belt, because there's been so many times where he has escaped because of that. Now, what that's led me to believe is that there needs to be a story that's told. And I don't know if it's ever been told, but I would hope that there's a henchman that works for every villain in the Batman 66 universe that finally puts it together. That, damn, I want to take his utility. I want to capture this guy, and I'm going to take his utility belt, and comes like inches within killing Batman. That would be a good story. I would read that. I would read that. But anyway, pretty much they drop Batman from the egg blimp. I mean, Egghead is upset about the fact that the last thing he said to Batman and Robin before dropping them was that he is about to be scrambled, when he should have said something totally different. It's just so goofy. Batman summons the Batcopter. By using the utility belt, the Batcopter comes down. They jump in the Batcopter, take control of the egg blimp, and land the egg blimp in prison. And Egghead is then arrested, summarily arrested, put into a cell, whatever. And our final panel shows how many freaking egg jokes can you make? I mean, come on. Expletive deleted, as the final panel shows.
Yay!
all right. I was extremely disappointed. Extremely. Oh boy.
Waka waka.
Next story. I ain't even gonna bring up that story on YouTube. There's no need to. All right. Now we get a dose of the Mad Hatter. The Mad Hatter. The titles of this story is The Hatter Takes the Crown: A Chase in London Town. Now, Batman and Robin hop a regular old jet, which that ought to be interesting. Just imagine getting on a plane and there sits Batman in full costume, along with Robin sitting beside him. But they hop a jet, and they go over to investigate some hat thefts that are going on over in London. They believe one of their old villains is up to no good, and his name is Mad Hatter. Now, one of the things that I love is when they get off the plane, like, everybody's cheering. They're going, Batman, Batman. And, you know, he's waving. But in front of him are, I think, five familiar figures. I don't have the panel in front of me, and I really don't know much about these guys. Yeah, take that for what it's worth. The Beatles are getting off of him of the plane at the same time, and everybody's yelling for the Batman. Nobody's paying any attention to the Beatles. So just throwing that out there. Batman has a Batmobile fashioned for himself over here, and it's brought to him. They hop in the British Batmobile. They're heading over to the Tower of London because Batman has deduced that is where the Mad Hatter is going to be to steal none other than the crown jewels. Before they could arrive, sure enough, Mad Hatter and his cronies are there. They're taking the crown jewels along with everybody else's hats and wallets. And we get a good look at the insanity of the Mad Hatter and his obsession with hats as he goes around and he describes how everybody's hat is like an indicator of who that person is. So that's why he has this obsession. He thinks it's just something that tells who the person is. And of course, he's got to get his hands on every one of them. Now, just as Batman and Robin show up, the Mad Hatter and his goons escape in some hovering hats. They give chase throughout London. And finally, I think it's Alfred who uses the bat beam to bring down the Mad Hatter, and they turn him over to the authorities, and they also rescue the crown jewels. So there's a lot of detail that I kind of left out of that, but pretty much Mad Hatter takes the jewels, takes off, Batman and Robin catch up, and Alfred joins in on the fun by hitting them with this laser beam, and they're able to, of course, capture Mad Hatter. So there we go, Mark Radulich. What did you think of this one as I bring up our issue cover here?
Really, the only thing that makes it fine and fun is the fact that I don't remember in the series if they ever left Gotham, but doing this in England and having like the British Batmobile and all that was fun. Mm-hmm. Like if I actually got to see that like on TV or in a movie or whatever, and they did those gags, including the Dick Grayson struggling to drive on the left side of the road.
Yeah.
I found all that to be pretty fun. I enjoyed that. And while neither the Clock King nor the Mad Hatter are particularly interesting villains, I think changing the setting and some of the gags that go with the settings was good enough that everything else was just fine. Everything else supported that idea.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was amusing, but certainly better than the Egghead story.
I want to get I'll have to find our artist here because I want to point something out here. I don't know if you have this on your screen or if you're looking at it, but if you look at the way these panels are drawn, there's almost there's that old comic feel in some of it. Do you know what I'm talking about, where like you have the crosshatch or the dots?
Yeah.
That you'll see, like, it's almost like it fades into, while you look at this Batman right here on his legs have got that crosshatch dot feeling, but then, you know, it fades into regular old collar up here. And same thing over here. So it's kind of interesting how that they did a good job with the art and making it feel classic. That's another one of those ways of giving that classic feel to some really good art, in my opinion, on this. I'm going to try and find here's that part where I was talking about where the Beatles show up. Everybody's yelling Batman and Robin. But anyway, I really don't have much to add here either on this particular issue. The Mad Hatter is a pretty interesting villain. But again, it's standard 60 Batman 66 fare and how they have to kind of wrangle the Mad Hatter and stop him from getting in the way. Going right into the next issue, they pick up, or the next story, they pick up where this one leaves off, where that night they're celebrating the Mad Hatter's capture there in jolly old England. Batman figures out something's amiss because during that chase, Big Ben sounded off twice. And he's like, that's kind of odd. He actually makes mention of that in that comic. And I was like, why did he say that? And then, of course, as we get into this next story, he explains that as he's putting it together, sitting there amongst all these other great detectives, he's like, wait a second, there's something going on. So they head over to what I assume is Big Ben. They go over to Big Ben. They realize that the Clock King has to be there. And sure enough, there he is. The Clock King is there. And the Clock King and Mad Hatter were working together to steal the crown jewels. Unfortunately, Mad Hatter has stopped. He failed in his endeavor. And the Clock King's kind of left there. But Batman and Robin show up to try and confront him. Batman and Robin are then they're been introduced to the Night Watchmen that the Clock King has constructed. Now, these things are, I don't know, they're robots. That's probably about he calls them automatons, but they're robots. Big old, huge, you know, knight looking things, like almost like a suit of armor came to life. Batman and Robin are having a hard time taking these guys out. You know, you can't just punch this steel or armored up robot and be able to take them out. So they have to use their wits, which they do, and they're finally able to take the Night Watchman out, and they're able to also secure the Clock King. And we find out, are they brothers? Is that what we find out? They have the same last name?
Correct.
Okay, so we find out Clock King and Mad Hatter are brothers. Batman put it all together, and they have the same last name as Tetch. At the end of this issue, where the Clock King is being taken away, Robin looks at him and hits him with, "Be prepared, because now you both can do time." Yeah. But anyway, I don't know what it looked like in your print issue, but since I had the digital, when you would scroll, and I sent you a couple videos of this, but when you would scroll, what would happen is like a word balloon would pop up. Okay.
Right. Right.
All right. Well, when he says you can do time and that word balloon pops up, at that exact same moment, the clock on Clock King's hat ends up like shooting forward and coming out like a spring comes loose. So it was just funny. It's just funny to see that little bit of, you know, it's not animation, but it almost is as you're scrolling down. You know, that little clock just kind of pops out as he says that. And it's like, oh, geez. But again, it's standard Batman 66 camp when that's been used. Anything you'd like to say out of those two issues? Anything else before we move on to Sandman?
Nope.
All right. All right. Art and colors by Jonathan Case. So I think he did a good job with that. Now here, this is where the art really takes off for me. This almost feels so much like a comic. It really almost surpasses any classic feel in any way for this next one, which is The Sandman Says Goodnight, Batman Sleeps Tight. I mean, The Sandman is just like your normal mythical Sandman that you can think of. This guy's a villain who uses sleep sand to sedate his victims, and then what he can do is while they're under that sedation, he can talk to them, and they're very suggestible. So if he says, "Give me your wallet," he's going to reach into his back pocket, pull out his wallet, here you go, and snore at the same time. That's kind of like the power set of this villain. And of course, he has a bunch of cronies, as do, you know, many Batman villains. We are alerted here at the beginning of this story where Chief O'Hara has been abducted by the Sandman. Batman and Robin are on the case. They are all over town trying to find this guy. They figure out it's Sandman. They just can't find him. And I love where they're sitting. I think they're at a bar, or maybe it's a restaurant. They've exhausted almost all their leads to try and find it, to try and find Sandman. I think the bartender offers them a cup of coffee. And Batman's like, "Well, I normally decry the use of stimulants, but in this case, I made an exception." I mean, again, that's Batman 66 for you. Is that, I mean, that what he was like in the show, you know, they tried to stay faithful to that, where he stayed to the letter of the law, and he didn't hesitate to like let you in on some kind of whether it be some type of law or whether it be some type of moral way of acting. Adam West had a, you know, it felt like he had this civic duty to, "I'm a superhero, but let's obey to the letter of the law. You can't be, you can't be driving while you're under 16, things like that." He'd always slip that stuff in there. Anyway.
Yeah.
So Sandman is, they can't find Sandman until here he comes riding down the street with this fire truck that he's using to, instead of water coming out of the hose, he's shooting all this sleep sand. Batman and Robin, as they're trying to make it across the street to the Batmobile to get the gas masks, one of Sandman's female companions comes up and grabs both of their capes, exposing Batman and Robin to the sleep sand, and they fall asleep. As well do many citizens of Gotham, because Sandman wasn't just out to take care of Batman and Robin. They're going to loot the whole city by putting everybody to sleep. Now, here's things where things get trippy again. We go into the 60s, and we're going into Batman's head, because the Sandman sits down. He's trying to get Batman to tell him the location of the Batcave. And we have another instance in which a henchman of one of the villains actually has the right idea, where she tells Sandman and says, "Look, why don't you just take his freaking mask off? Then you'll know who the guy is." And the Sandman like berates her. Is like, "What are you, crazy? I want to know where the Batcave is. That's what I need to know." So the Sandman is trying to get the location of the Batcave. But Batman soon realizes that he's dreaming, is able to somewhat take control of himself again, to where he reaches down into his utility belt and presses a button, and he sounds the bat alarm and wakes himself up. and also at this point, waking up, he's about to, you know, take care of Sandman. But before he can, an alerted Chief O'Hara wakes up out of his slumber, yawns, sticks his arm out, and Camp, I mean, this is like a dang cartoon. It sticks his arm out, accidentally hits Sandman, thus knocking him out. Batman, Robin, and Chief O'Hara save the day. Chief O'Hara, this guy, pretty prominent character in the show as well.
Yeah, I mean, he was useless.
they tend to make that obvious.
He was there.
Yeah.
You know, like, it was basically, he was at a mop-up after Batman had knocked everybody out.
Okay. All right. Okay. I'm going to bring up some pictures here because I really do think Ruben Procopio and the colorist Matthew Wilson, again, I was impressed with these sets of issues when it comes to art, just the way these things looked. Do you know off the top of your head, did you say Sandman was actually a villain in the show?
They created this particular version of Sandman for the show.
Okay. All right. So he has or he has not been in the show?
Has
been in the show. Okay. But yeah, I mean, if you look at the Sandman here, because that's where I was like, man, he does not look like something that I would see in the show. As faithful as the rest of these renditions to characters and villains were, this guy looked menacing and scary. I mean, look at that face. I mean, for crying out loud.
The Sandman coming. Catwoman and the Sandman have teamed up, and they're after the fortunes of J. Pauline Spaghetti, a rich insomniac.
What?
It's the episode.
That is the episode?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I really like the art in this one. I like the visualization. This is one where I think this would have worked really well as the bones of a Batman the Animated Series episode. Outside of that, it's fine.
You sporific Svengali. the old bat insults every once in a while, the wordy bat insults that Batman would throw at a villain, that shows up every once in a while on a couple of these issues. But I remember him saying, "You sporific Svengali," and I remember laughing out loud, seriously, when I read that. Because it's just like, gosh, you could just tell they're reaching for anything. Our next final story, Batman 66, this epic long podcast that we're having. The Tale of the Tiger Topaz. So Catwoman attempts to steal a jewel, but Batman and Robin are in Japan dealing with Lord Deathman. That's a pretty intimidating villain name. Lord Deathman. Now, who can stop Catwoman but none other than Batgirl? So pretty much what happens here, real simple. Catwoman shows up to steal the jewel. Batgirl says, no, you're not going to do that. And they fight, and they fight. And they fight to where they're actually really wore out from fighting. Batgirl smartly set the alarm off before the fight began. So as they're kind of there catching their breath and about to go to round two, Commissioner Gordon shows up and arrests Catwoman while Batgirl is off to patrol the streets of Gotham. And that's it. I mean, really, they kind of play on the fact that Barbara Gordon is definitely Batgirl, so it's not like she shows up and no one knows who she is. But the Catwoman that's in this one, who is this representative of in the series, in the show?
The Eartha Kitt Catwoman.
She is?
Yeah.
Okay, our first one then, who was that?
Julie Newmar.
Thank you. Okay. All right, because I noticed in this issue, they look completely different.
Yeah, one's black and one's white. I don't know if you noticed that or not.
I noticed. Well, I was like, well, wait a second. You know, they're two totally different Catwoman. At first, I thought it was going to be some villain named Cougar because that's what her name was.
Did you not know there were three different Catwomen?
Again, yeah. I could tell you that I did not.
Okay. Nope. There were three. There was one in the movie. There was one in the television show. And then there's the black one.
What do you got to say, Mark?
I mean, it was a quick little. So the problem with some of these is, like, you know, they were the second half of, like, the second story in an issue that had been dedicated mostly to something else.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, all right, well, you know, we have a few extra pages where nothing happened. So here, we'll fill it with the story, and it's just filler. I didn't think there was anything more to it than that.
Yeah, well, and I think you're right. I mean, what you'd find is that they do two really involved. Like what felt like a really involved episode, and then like what you would see, I swear, would probably be like a 10-minute at the end credit scene or something.
Yeah,
that's
it'd be like if Batman the Animated Series had like, you know, like the episode ended early And so they're like, they just do like a tacked on thing at the end.
Yes.
Like the Simpsons did this every once in a while. And it wasn't, it was an occasional gag they would do where the episode would end early. And they were like, everybody loves Ned Flanders, not me. Everyone that matters loves Ned Flanders. And they would have like 2 minutes of Ned Flanders.
Uh-huh.
You know, and they were like, we're not going to church today. Why not? It's Saturday. Oh, you guys, everybody loves Ned Flanders. Like, oh, you can't really judge that.
That's true.
You know, or Cletus the Slack-Jawed Yokel.
Yep. Yep.
Another one of my... some folks can have a driver trying to say it again. Some folks will... Like Cletus the Slack-Jawed Yokel.
Overall, I'll go ahead and give you my final thoughts. When it came to Batman 66, I didn't know what I was getting into. I knew from the reviews that I had heard before, I knew that they were very true to the show. And of course, I already discussed my feelings on the show. So I wasn't like sitting here expecting to get wowed by a tremendous Batman story. I was expecting fun. I was expecting a good time. I can tell you one of the definite positive things that came out of this, reading this, was getting my hands on the digital copy. I think this was probably one of the top digital comics I've ever read, where they used the digital format well enough to tell the story and add almost a tiny bit of animation, or at least let the story flow to where it almost added to the story. A lot of times when you're reading something digitally, it can almost take away, because I know you've discussed how when you're sitting there trying to focus on a digital comic, you almost got to peel your eyes out or something. You got to do something. Put on like your 8x specs. I don't know. It's tough. It's tough to read something digitally. They've realized that using the digital format, instead of showing a full page, instead it's a panel, one full panel on your screen. And then as you scroll, a word balloon will pop up or a little action will happen. I really enjoyed that. Those few issues that I had digitally that represented this comic book, and it added to it. Now, as for the storytelling, it was fun. I had a good time reading it. I mean, you're not going to take anything out of this and go, oh man, Batman 66 continuity. None of these, when you went from story to story, of course, what'd we do? We only did 5 print issues here. So it's not like there's a heavy continuity where you're like, okay, next issue is going to be, a long story arc. We're just looking at a story that's intact for a couple issues, and then we're done. We've told that story and we've kind of moved on. And what other hijinks is the Batman, the Caped Crusader, and the Boy Wonder going to get into? Stay tuned, Bat fans. Same Bat time, same Bat channel.
Look, I'm a fan of short story books, and that's kind of what this was. I think there's a habit for comic book people, maybe not necessarily you, but to get involved in these, like, these long, super serious stories.
Mm-hmm.
And look, I'm a biggest fan of universe building as anybody, but there is something quaint and nice about being able to pick up a book that is self-contained, finish the book and go, I'm done here.
Yes.
That said, I enjoyed these stories. I laughed. I thought these were well-written stories. I really think that the people who put this together encapsulated what that series was about, but we're not content to just sort of rest on their laurels and be like, all right, well, we created nonsense. You're like, okay, well, it's not like anyone reading this is going to have high expectations. No, they really went above and beyond. Like, that Joker story was amazing.
It's good.
You know, the Penguin story was as good as any caper, any burglary plot that they came up with on the show. I'm going to end up probably getting the remaining 4 volumes, and I would come back and talk about it again.
Yeah.
I'll be curious to see what they did with Bane. You know, Bane was such a very specific villain. I mean, he's since, like, come to become something else, but when you think about Nightfall and what Bane was, you know, he was Batman's, like, greatest threat there for a while. Yeah, and he's since not anymore, but there was a period where, you know, where Bane was set up as, like, Batman had conquered everybody. And even in the movie, he was the unconquerable country. So I'd be curious to see what they did with him in the Batman 66 comic.
Do you think he'll be somebody's lackey, sort of like what he was? If you want to talk about almost, it was a Batman and Robin that was really, really campy.
That was a studio decision. That was Batman. That, if you remember when Batman and Robin came out, Nightfall was biggest time.
Yep.
Bane was a huge character, and it was like, we gotta get Bane in the movie. And they were like, there's nowhere for him. The characters are Mr. Freeze and Poison Ivy. Well, give Poison Ivy a henchman, so she can't physically fight Batman. Okay, that would have made more sense had they used Solomon Grundy. But
yeah.
Solomon Grundy, at the time, like that character should have been called Solomon Grundy.
Yeah.
And instead, they could have come up with some ridiculous origin where she, like, she used like plant venom to like reanimate his body. And they didn't even have to do the Solomon Grundy born on a Monday kind of a thing. They could have just made him like a zombie slave and called him Solomon Grundy, and that would have been fine. And it worked, and it really would have worked the same way. And so Bane Honey, get him. Like Solomon Honey, get him. No change. But again, Solomon Grundy wasn't the hit character at the time. This is why, like, I wish I worked for a studio.
Yeah, nobody would have had any idea who that was.
Like, let's have a... Well, there planned to be a Batman 5. Like, had Joel Schumacher not driven the Batman series off a cliff, there were plans already at the time at Warner Brothers to do a fifth Batman movie, and they should have just done... They should have just given Bane his own movie.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a whole other podcast, a whole other discussion. You got to remember something about movies. The studio executives try not to get involved in the creative process. The history of that series of Batman movies was that Tim Burton had taken it really dark, and then with the second movie, he took it too dark. So they brought in Joel Schumacher to lighten it up. And I guess there came a point where, and it's still the Warner Brothers belief now, which is why they're having so much trouble with Ben Affleck, which is, it doesn't matter how good the script is, Batman's a billion-dollar property. Without realizing that Batman's a billion-dollar property because most of the Batman properties are good.
Yeah.
But if you create nonsense, people will not show.
That's right. That's right.
You know, Batman v Superman should have made over $1 billion. It didn't because it was nonsense. You know, and then they changed too much about the character, and the plot didn't make any sense. And you know, like, I defended the movie a lot, but there's a lot wrong with Batman v Superman. not the least of which was mopey Superman. In any case, you asked me about Batman 66 Volume 1, and I enjoyed this conversation. I enjoyed talking about it. I thought it was a great book, and I would... I don't have a reason to twist your arm into doing another one of these.
Oh, you know, I would absolutely love to join you again. I'll read anything. I had fun reading these. We're definitely on the slate. You're going to have to, once you get the second volume, let me know.
Yeah, no, you tell me when you're ready to do another one, and I'll pick it up.
We finished it. We did Batman 66 Volume 1. Let's go ahead. Well, I guess we'll get into plugs.
When this goes up, we'll have already put some shows in the can. So Jesse and I had to reschedule Black Mirror Season 2 TV Party. That show will have already posted. The latest Metal Hammer of Doom will have already posted. That's Overkill, The Grinding Wheel, and the On Trial that was canceled due to my hospitalization. Resident Evil, that will have already posted. Tomorrow night on the network, we have a TV party for Chef's Table Season 1, assuming I still have a guest for that. Wednesday is Marilyn Manson, Say 10. And then Thursday, I believe, is Catwoman. I'd have to look at my schedule again. I'm not on my computer anymore. But that's all I got for now.
Catwoman on trial?
Hell yeah.
Oh, jeez. Are you defending?
Hell yeah. I can't wait.
Yeah. Best of luck, sir.
I'm very creative.
Okay. Whatever. However, I mean, yeah, if you can figure out a way to dig yourself out of a hole there, you go right ahead, because that's pretty much where you're going to start with fucking Catwoman, defending Catwoman.
Just a couple of source materials that I'm involved with over the next month or so. Obviously, there's this one. We have Old Man Logan / Wolverine Week, which we'll talk about. And then we will be getting together again in March for Iron Fist, The Living Weapon, Volumes 1 and 2.
That's right. That's right. Ladies and gentlemen, you can go back into the archive here on YouTube if you like and check out some of our previous shows. I think we're going to do a little bit of a transition episode. It's already been on here, but me and Ronnie recorded one on Dark Claw. So we'll probably do that in transition before we do the Old Man Logan show. So kind of watch out for that. Me and Ronnie talked about the first issue and the only issue of Legends of the Dark Claw. And if you like Batman and you like Wolverine, well, if you like peanut butter and you like chocolate, you're going to enjoy that one. That was a fun discussion about two iconic characters from the big two comic book companies. And the only other thing I really got to plug is go give the Rattlitch and Broadcasting Network Facebook page a like. Stay up on top of all the great podcasts that we have to offer. just like I mentioned Stuart Lang, who showed up on the network here. We now have a video game podcast called the Press Start Podcast. Check that out. They talk retro gaming and current gaming news. Fun show. At some point, you would be hearing me, Ronnie, and possibly Adam talking some Screaming Boy stuff here pretty soon, too. That's all I have. I'm ready to go to bed. Mark Radulich, thank you for, number one, getting out of the hospital. You know, thank you for that. Thank you for going right back into podcasting immediately. Like, if I was coming out of the hospital, I'd be like, I need a month. You went right back to it. So
I was considering doing it from the hospital.
You're insane. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, my name's Jesse. That's Mark. We're out of here. This is Source Material. Have a good one. Thank you very much, and good night.